But I'm saying to the legislature, Dave, please do your job.
Governor Walker scolds lawmakers for gaveling in and then gaveling out in Juneau. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the FCC expresses concern about a deal involving Doyon and Dish Network.
What was once a well-intentioned program designed to help small businesses has become a playpen for corporate giants.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
When the Alaska State Legislature voted to take a recess, they set May 12th as the date they would reconvene in Juneau. But with no deal on a budget or Medicaid expansion, most lawmakers remained in Anchorage or in their home districts today. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports from a sleepy capital as the threat of government shutdown looms.
With just a handful of legislators in the chambers, the House floor session lasted about 10 minutes. The Senate lasted just 5, skipping right over the usual prayer and pledge of allegiance. Leadership breezed through the agenda of what is known as a technical session, a meeting where a few lawmakers gavel in simply to keep the clock going. The only real action was a series of floor speeches offered by the minority members in attendance. Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins bemoaned the gridlock and talked about the risk of a government shutdown if a deal is not reached.
I don't think the Washington, D.C.-ification of our politics is a healthy trend, and it's really distressing for me to hear the words government shutdown in association with our state government. Normally that's something we hear about with the federal government.
Then there was Juneau Democrat Sam Keto chiding the legislature for relocating to Anchorage as the sound of drills working on Capitol renovations interrupted him. Nobody mentioned anything about progress. The legislature was supposed to gavel out of its regular session on April 19th, but lawmakers have been at an impasse over the budget. With the state facing a multi-billion dollar deficit, lawmakers need a supermajority to balance it with funds from the rainy day account. But House Democrats have said they will not support that without Medicaid expansion and more money for education. House Speaker Mike Chenault says that negotiations are ongoing. He said no bargaining points have been settled and a divide still exists between the Democratic and Republican caucuses.
You know, just trying to find out what the minority needs to get out of here. And unfortunately, that's the exact opposite of what the Senate would like to see and what a number of House members might want to see. They don't want to see the budget increase. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a matter of trying to put together a way to not increase the budget, but still be able to get out of here and get the support for the three-quarter vote that we need.
As all that is happening, no votes have been taken on any of the three special session agenda items: the budget, Medicaid expansion, and a sexual abuse prevention bill known as Aaron's Law. While the House already passed Aaron's Law in the regular session and continues to hold daily finance hearings, the Senate has held just 2 meetings since the governor called them into special session. At an afternoon press conference, Governor Bill Walker said he was frustrated by the lack of progress made during the special session.
What I'm saying to the legislature today, please do your job. Do it now. Give us a budget that's funded. Accept a Medicaid expansion and pass Aaron's Law. 3 things. We can't spend the entire summer working on this, and we shouldn't.
The next floor sessions are scheduled for Friday and Saturday this week and are expected to be technical sessions barring any deal between lawmakers. If a compromise on the budget cannot be brokered, the state government is at risk of shutting down as soon as this summer. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The state's troubled Medicaid payment system has seen improvements in recent months, according to Walker administration officials. Healthcare Services Director Margaret Brody briefed legislators on the state's progress with the system at House Finance Committee hearings today and yesterday. The update comes as Governor Bill Walker has asked lawmakers to accept federal dollars to expand the state's Medicaid program. Out of the 500 defects found in the Xerox-built system, fewer than 100 remain. Brody also said claims were being processed with greater than 90% accuracy. She said the system is not perfect, but it is improving dramatically and can handle more claims.
The amount of work that remains is still significant, yet from October 2014 to the present, we have made significant progress.
The problems with the payment system have caused Republican lawmakers to describe Medicaid as broken, and a number have said they do not support expansion of the program until the system is reformed. Brody's presentation did not convince some Republican members of the House Finance Committee that the system had been sufficiently repaired. Representative Lance Pruitt, an Anchorage Republican, said he does not feel the improvements go far enough.
We seem to be a little bit more comfortable now with the same thing that at that point in time we had an issue with.
The committee will continue to hold hearings on Medicaid throughout the week. The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission said this morning the FCC is ready to investigate how a company partly owned by Fairbanks-based Doyon won licenses to use wireless spectrum while claiming it was entitled to billions of dollars in discounts. Critics say Doyon's big corporate partner, Dish Network, is taking advantage of a program meant to help small businesses. But as APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, Doyon says the program worked exactly as intended.
When the FCC wants to sell licenses to use the public airwaves, it holds a spectrum auction. And spectrum is the real estate the wireless industry is built on. Dish Network, a big satellite TV company, did well at a spectrum auction early this year. Dish holds a majority stake in two companies that placed the winning bids on many of the licenses sold at that auction. Combined, they bid more than $13 billion. But the companies say they only have to pay $10 billion because they qualify as small enterprises, or designated entities, as they're called in FCC rules, and thus entitled to a 25% discount. FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai told a Senate panel it's outrageous.
What was once a well-intentioned program designed to help small businesses has become a playpen for corporate giants. The FCC's recent AWS-3 spectrum auction is a shocking case in point.
Commissioner Pai says the FCC should reform its designated entity program so this never happens again. And he says the commission should reject the discounts if it finds Dish didn't comply with the rules.
To be frank, I'm appalled that a corporate giant has attempted to use small business discounts to rip off American taxpayers to the tune of $3.3 billion.
FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler told senators he agrees with Pai, and before the next auction, he hopes to update the discount program.
I was around when it was created in 1993. It has the right kind of philosophy, and it's a mandate from the Congress that we need to make sure that there are opportunities created for small businesses. And the problem is that the world has changed a lot since then, and our rules haven't.
This week was the deadline for filing objections to the last auction. Seven objections are now pending against the two Dish-owned companies, SNR and Northstar Wireless. Northstar is 15% owned by Doyon Limited, the Alaska Native Corporation for the Interior Region, and Doyon says it controls Northstar. Alan Todd, Doyon's general counsel, says Northstar followed the rules. Todd says the ownership percentage of Northstar is similar to that of past FCC bidders that received the designated entity discount.
In Washington, occasionally success gets punished as much as doing something wrong, and I suspect that maybe the success in this case is probably what's attracted a lot of attention.
Todd says there was no ripoff of the taxpayer at the auction. One of the goals of the designated entity program is to increase competition. Analysts had predicted the auction would attract no more than $20 billion in bids. Instead, it drew double that. The Doyon attorney says the designated entities helped bring in more bidders and more money.
So we can certainly focus on $3.3 billion in bidding credits that were awarded, or we can focus on the U.S. Treasury net of bidding credits receiving an additional $23 billion in proceeds.
The Senate Commerce Committee is also investigating the bid discounts. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka dedicates the small but mighty Blue Lake Hydro Project.
Stuck our hand up and said, fine, we got a couple little hydro projects. We don't want the billions, the $8 billion you guys want in the rail belt. We just want some rounding errors, chump change.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The National Park Service reports that two Idaho climbers have been rescued after an avalanche on Mount Dickey in the Alaska Range. According to a statement from Denali National Park, 27-year-old Saxon Spellman and 24-year-old Michael Walks were on the mountain when the avalanche occurred, but neither was caught in the slide. The pair attempted to climb down after the avalanche, but could not find a safe route. Maureen Galtieri, spokeswoman for Denali National Park, says the climbers signaled a local air taxi pilot by stomping an SOS into the snow and waving their arms. They also activated a GPS locator. After mountaineering rangers spotted Spellman and Walks from the air, a search and rescue helicopter was dispatched. The rescue helicopter, piloted by veteran rescue pilot Andy Hermansky, was able to land on the mountain and pick up the two stranded climbers. Photos taken by a ranger show that where Walks and Spellman were was one of the few safe places on the face of Mount Dickey. Park Service staff have reported an increase in avalanche activity following several feet of fresh snow and windy conditions. Thus far, no major accidents have been reported in the Alaska Range for the 2015 climbing season. Anchorage High School students who feel like their teachers really care about them are 50% less likely to drink. Young women in Alaska attempt suicide at twice the rate of young men. Those are just a few statistics being used to develop behavioral health solutions for Anchorage's youth. From the Urban Affairs Desk, KSKA's Ann Hillman has more.
There's plenty of data available about youth behaviors like substance use, suicide attempts, and feelings of loneliness. It's captured by tools like the Youth Risk Behavior Survey and the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. Now, a coalition of youth-focused organizations in Anchorage is using the data to create behavioral health solutions. Deborah Williams with the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition says the first step is presenting the data to the community and asking them what they think is most important.
We really want to make sure that our efforts are focused on issues that the community cares about and that will make a difference.
During a series of presentations, community members and youth have highlighted issues like raising awareness of mental health issues for younger kids and helping young people deal with feelings like loneliness. Spirit of Youth Executive Director Karen Zeman says they want to find out the reasons for the numbers. Why do young women tend to feel more sadness, hopelessness, and stress than young men? Why is online bullying more likely to lead kids to drink than in-school bullying?
There have been a lot of wonderful programs in Anchorage for youth, but they haven't necessarily been evidence-based. So what we're trying to do is take a step back, figure out what the top priorities are, and then figure out what really will work to move the needle.
The data already confirm that some things have positive impacts, like young people who feel like they matter to others in the community are nearly 60% less likely to consider suicide. The coalition also includes Healthy Voices, Healthy Choices, and is running the project development with funds from the state's Division of Behavioral Health. They hope to have new programs focused on youth behavioral health by 2016. Reporting from the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
State and local officials, including Governor Bill Walker, gathered in Sitka last week to formally dedicate the Blue Lake Dam, the largest public works project in Sitka history. It's projected to meet the city's electricity needs for the next 30 years. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz has more.
Mayor Mim McConnell and project manager Dean Orbison did the honors, smashing a bottle of champagne against one of the brand new bright blue turbines in Sitka's Blue Lake powerhouse.
Ready?
Ready.
It marked the end of a process that began years ago as the city found itself maxing out the two dams that provide most of Sitka's electricity and burning expensive diesel without much power to spare for expanding businesses. The project broke ground in 2012. 2 years later, Sitka has raised the Blue Lake Dam by 83 feet, inundated more than 300 acres of rainforest, and added the three new turbines, which together increased the city's hydro capacity by 27%. That means, if all goes according to plan, Sitka will be running on rainfall for the next 3 decades. Sitka Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins called it a declaration of independence, and Governor Bill Walker said this kind of energy self-sufficiency is a model for the rest of the state.
This is a great day not just for Sitka, this is a great day for Alaska.
Walker told the crowd that stable energy costs are the key to a growing economy, and that more communities in Alaska need to liberate themselves from volatile energy sources like diesel.
People love this project now. They're going to really love it 10 years from now. You're going to be absolute, you know, legends 30 years from now because you have stabilized the cost of energy. You're not tied to, you know, a world index of something. You've done this yourself.
The project hasn't been without controversy, especially as the price tag grew from an early construction estimate of $50 million to a final project cost of $142 million, or $158 million if you include new backup diesel generators. Of that, the state has kicked in about $59 million. The city has borrowed the rest. But city officials say the dam is worth every penny. And State Senator Bert Stedman recalled negotiating for those pennies in the legislature as Rail Belt lawmakers sought funding for massive hydro projects like the proposed Susitna-Watonna Dam.
So we stuck our hand up and said, fine, we got a couple little hydro projects. We don't want the billions, the $8 billion you guys want in the Rail Belt. We just want some rounding errors, chump change, and we'll get our little project, which one of which is Blue Lake.
Stedman is already looking ahead to the next project. He said he hopes Sitka's economy grows so fast it maxes out Blue Lake's new capacity in half the time projected. This may be the largest project in city history so far, he said, but
I'm hoping when they bury me in the future and I'm gonna last long enough, it'll be number two. That's the goal here.
On to the next dam. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Alaska's farm produce vendors are prepping for the busy summer season. Some use the organic label, others don't. But what exactly is it that makes a vegetable organic? KSKA's Ellen Lockyer finds out the difference between no-till farming, organic farming, and just plain farming.
Okay, you can put this all in the same bag. I don't want to do that.
On a busy Saturday at the Sears Mall in Anchorage, Butte organic farmer Mark Rempel is doing a brisk business. Customers line up for potatoes, cabbages, and bright golden squash.
If you came and saw what we crank out of our little piece of ground, it's pretty amazing. We only farm 14. And if you watch what happens in South Anchorage on a Saturday, how much produce goes flying out of our stand, you understand that there's a lot of production happening.
First of all, Rempel says organic farming and no-till farming are two very different things. He says just by taking his produce to market, he's depleting the soil. That's because the vegetables themselves have taken nutrients out of the ground just by growing. And those nutrients must be put back in, or the soil suffers.
We have a wonderful opportunity in Alaska with the fish industry because they have a lot of byproduct. They will dry out their waste. They run it across a screen, and the fish meal falls through the screen, and that's high protein, high nitrogen. It's used for dog food. It's also used for fertilizer. But then there's the bones, and that's what I use. That comes to Palmer, and there's a guy with a hammer mill, and he grinds it up into sawdust, and I put that on my field. Every micronutrient that is soluble in the sea is in that.
He says he's putting stuff back into the soil that was not there in the first place. Rempel is the only certified organic producer left in South Central Alaska. He tills the soil, but his organic certification limits the types of soil enhancements that he can use. He broadcasts the fish bone meal and mixes in calcium and other minerals which feed the microbes in the soil, rather than the plants.
I feed them so that they work symbiotically with the plant, because the plant exudes sugars and the microbes come to that, but they bring nutrients to the plant in a way that the plant can use them better than straight fertilizer. So I feed the soil to feed the plant to feed us.
Down the mall corridor, Alex Davis sells produce and pork harvested on his Palmer acreage. Davis says do-nothing farming is a bad idea.
We are taking out thousands of pounds of carrots a year off of 2 acres. I have to have inputs into that to be able to take that back out. You can't just take out and expect it to not collapse.
Davis says he fertilizes using fish bone meal too.
We also use lime very heavily, which is very high in calcium, which is a great thing to put in, and that's made our vegetables sweeter over the years. Sometimes we use some soft rock phosphate, but every now and then I will use either cow manure or pig manure.
He says he farms organically but is no longer certified organic. What's the difference?
The amount of headache I have to do in paperwork.
So it's the paperwork that makes it organic? Rempel says there's more to it than that. It's consumer confidence as well. Rempel gets his soil tested by an independent lab for recommendations as to what nutrients are needed. He says balancing out the proper mix of nutrients is the trick to healthy soil. And soil is the very foundation of agriculture. 2015 is the International Year of Soil. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Skagway's modern gold rush, the cruise ship season, has begun. The town of around 1,000 people expects almost 800,000 cruise ship passengers this summer. And the first 2,000 of those passengers had the chance to explore the town last week. The Celebrity Solstice sailed north from Vancouver with stops in Ketchikan, Juneau, and Skagway. KHNS's Emily Files has the story.
Southeast Alaska residents are reveling in the warm, sunny May weather. But some cruise ship passengers are confused.
I was just going to say, I was expecting more snow and not realizing how temperate really it was.
And there's now snow on the ground. We expected at least 2 or 3 foot of snow.
But the snowless sidewalks aren't a big deal. Not for Floridian Martin Levinson, at least. Alaska, he says, there's nothing like it on Earth.
But I visited all the other 49 other states, so this is the last one. Save the best for last.
This is Levinson's 19th cruise, but he's never been to Skagway before. David Freeman and Denise Gunn from Victoria, B.C. are repeat visitors to Skagway.
We'll probably get to, is it the Purple Onion? The pub of the Red Onion? Yeah, we'll probably get to there.
This is their sixth time here.
No, Skagway is just beautiful. I really enjoy it. If Skagway wasn't on the itinerary, I probably wouldn't do it.
David and Denise head to the Red Onion on Broadway, and Eric Hawk from Alberta heads to the...
train ride. Choo-choo. Be a kid again.
It's quite an interesting operation to see moving so many people around. I mean, we
haul over 400,000 passengers a year.
Tyler Rose is HR director at the White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. The railroad takes passengers on scenic rides to destinations like Carcross and Fraser. It's also the biggest summer employer in Skagway, with 175 people working on the train, the gift shop, the ticket booth.
It's unreal. It really is. I mean, all the people coming in, it's almost like a homecoming. The shops open up. The ships start coming in. I know for the businesses, the cash registers start to ring.
Caribou and a buffalo burger. Okay, that'd be $27.20.
Bob Gibson is owner of the Barbecue Shack.
We do caribou burgers, caribou and elk and buffalo burgers. And in my baby back ribs, the meat will just fall right off the bone.
Bob just sold a couple burgers to Laura Everett and her husband. They're from England, and it's their first time in Alaska.
We've traveled, and we've done Juneau and Ketchikan and Skagway. And Skagway is just so beautiful. It's so pretty. The buildings are stunning.
Laura says they wanted to come to Alaska because they watch TV shows that take place here, like The Deadliest Catch and Ice Road Truckers.
We've seen it on television, but it just does not do it justice. It really doesn't. It's beautiful.
Laura says they're also enjoying learning about the history of Skagway, the gold rush days.
A man by the name of J.D. Stewart strolled into town with $2,800 worth of gold dust in his poke. Jeff's men were still riled up from the Fourth. I guess they must have felt untouchable because they lured poor J.D. into Jeff's parlor and right into a trap.
Allison Graham plays Belle Davenport in the Days of 98 show, which she says is a mostly true story.
And it's a vaudeville-style show all about Soapy Smith and the events that led to his tragic demise at a shootout down on the pier on July 8, 1898.
Down the block from the Days of 98 show is a much different business, but one that you see all over the place in cruise ship ports, a jewelry store.
This is amethyst, and you can actually see it's still in rock form, so it hasn't been cut and polished.
Jennifer Ozuzun and her jeweler husband, Murat, own the local jeweler shop.
Are you feeling really excited about the start of the season?
Can you tell? I'm really excited. I waited 7 months for this. Yeah, and having your own, you know, it's our baby, so it's a big deal.
Jennifer says she's been back and forth between Skagway for 8 years. Her friend, Letitia Moore, who works at the Milano jewelry store, says she feels drawn to Skagway. And apparently so do the cruise ships. According to the Skagway Visitors Bureau, there will be 402 port calls this summer. Reporting in Skagway, I'm Emily Files.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Ann Hillman and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka, and Emily Files in Haines. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at crowleyalaska.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2015. Find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message is sponsored by APU.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.